This is Solidarity News on Radio Labour.
This is a Radio Labour World Report recorded on Friday, October 29, 2021. I'm Mark Boulanger. In the report this week, what Labour wants from the COP26 UN Climate Change Conference, a manifesto in support of a care society, the Labour Start report about union events and singing.
You new grandpa, you new grandpa, so tell me what did you do?
Tell me what you do.
You new grandma, you new grandma, so tell me what did you do?
This is Radio Labour.
It's really urgent to get good jobs and clean energy and to do it now.
That is Samantha Smith, the director of the Just Transition Center. The center was established in 2016 by the International Trade Union Confederation. The ITUC is the organization which represents national union centers such as the Ghana Trades Union Congress and the AFL-CIO in the United States. It established the Just Transition Center to bring together workers and their unions, businesses and governments, communities and civil society organizations to ensure that labor is represented as the world attempts to transition to a low-carbon world. I talked to Ms. Smith just before a major UN climate change conference was about to start. COP26 will be held in Glasgow, October 31st to November 12th, 2021. I asked Ms. Smith to describe Labour's goals for the conference.
Our goals for the climate negotiations are, first and foremost, that we want much more urgent climate action from governments, along with financing to back it up. And in particular, we want all countries to commit to just transition, which means that we want them not only to say how much they're going to reduce climate emissions, but also to do that with plans for workers and for decent jobs.
What is a just transition?
A just transition is an idea that comes from our movement, the labor movement. So it comes out of North American unions and some of their partners a couple of decades ago. And it's basically the idea that when you're trying to address a big problem like climate change, that you can do it in two ways. You can do it in a top-down, unjust way that makes people lose their jobs, or you can do it in a process with workers and our unions, with employers, sometimes with governments, where you basically negotiate what's going to happen to people's jobs at a workplace level, at a company level, at a national level, and even at a sectoral level. And instead of looking at this just as an exercise to cut emissions, you look at it as an exercise to make sure that everybody has social protection in this time of big transition, that the content of jobs may change, but jobs aren't going to get worse, and they might even get better, and that new jobs that are going to be created aren't going to be a bunch of sort of union-busting new entrants, but actually that the new jobs are going to be good jobs.
What can unions and their members do to support a just transition?
We are already doing it. So I have to say that over the last 5 years, which is about how long ITUC has had a just transition center, I personally have gotten to see so many of the national federations and unions at all different levels getting active on this issue. And what unions are doing is, one, they're pushing governments to deliver what I mentioned at the climate negotiations, so to deliver a process with unions at the table that's going to produce decent jobs and social protection while it brings down emissions. So that's a sort of big national policy level. At the sector level, for example, we're seeing the industrial unions in Europe having a massive campaign across Europe for a just transition for workers. They're campaigning through collective bargaining and also through national and European level policy work to get good jobs for workers. In South Africa, the unions collectively bargained for a national commission on just transition and climate change, and they're now negotiating at the national level a framework agreement on just transition. Yeah, I can go on and on, but there's really a lot happening, and in a lot of countries, including countries like Brazil, where our comrades at Coot Brazil have successfully negotiated with their affiliates a just transition process at the state level involving employers and governments and the energy sector.
You are one of the labor movement's leaders on the issue of climate change. Are you optimistic or pessimistic about the results of COP26, the UN Climate Change Conference?
Well, first of all, I wouldn't say I'm a leader. I would say I'm a busy and enthusiastic supporter of worker leaders and our elected leaders. But in terms of, you know, am I optimistic or pessimistic? I would say I am pessimistic because we already know from analysis of what governments have put forward, what they're likely to put forward, that it's nowhere near enough to get where we need to be on addressing climate change. On the other hand, there have been a couple of developments that are pretty good. So, for example, there's a big push on just transition from some governments. We even see some employers kind of grudgingly understanding that this is a process they need to engage in with organized labor. And we see even countries like the United States with the big, you know, legislation that's pending in Congress right now and the budgets, that there's a new approach from some governments where they're really listening to labor and they're really thinking about and trying to get action on climate that's going to create good jobs for people. So this COP, you know, might be kind of a mess. But the bigger picture is that we're making progress on some of our issues and we're just going to need to keep going.
So the struggle continues.
I think on all issues, including this one. But the thing that is concerning, of course, is that as we try to recover from COVID-19 and we're not done with the pandemic, what we're seeing is that on the one hand, lots of our members are getting back to work in the energy sector, and we always should be happy about that. On the other hand, companies and governments haven't invested near enough in getting us to clean and affordable and secure energy systems. And so we're seeing both an energy crisis and also emissions going up. It's really urgent to get good jobs and clean energy and to do it now.
October 29th is International Care Day, a day set aside to remind people of the importance of care workers and the services they provide. A group of organizations, including Public Services International, has released a manifesto with a five-step program on how to create a care society. I talked to PSI General Secretary Rosa Pavanelli about the manifesto and asked her about the section entitled Recognize.
Recognize because we realize that the care activities are one of the fundamental bias in our societies that are responsible for the gender inequality we suffer everywhere in the world. And so recognize for us means two fundamental aspects. The first is the recognition of the social and economic value of care, both paid and unpaid, meaning that we need to recognize also the economic value of the unpaid work that women do at home, caring their family, caring their relatives, and carrying the burden of this fundamental part of our social life. And the second is that we need to recognize care not only as an economic factor, and instead recognize care as a fundamental human right for all. It was like this in the past in many countries, particularly in the developed countries, but since the privatization of care services, the human rights aspect went lost. We need to recuperate that.
You can find more information about the manifesto and the group which launched it on the PSI website at publicservices.international. Here with his report about union events is Labor Start correspondent Derek Blackadder.
This week, our top stories section included links to coverage of the International Domestic Workers Federation's statement on the Global Day of Action for Care. This year, that event is getting more than the usual amount of attention as unions around the world push hard to improve the level of care provided to us all. In their own ways, many governments and most employers of care workers are also marking the day, but most are doing so in a way that stresses budget deficits and the need for care workers to make even greater sacrifices as the world starts to exit the COVID crisis. And of course, we also had coverage of the labor movement's preparations for COP26, its reaction to the coup in Sudan and solidarity with the unions leading the resistance there, and on how rogue employers in Norway exploit migrant workers. For our Working Women page, our volunteers found dozens of stories about the strike against sexual harassment by McDonald's workers in the USA, how unions are working to prevent online harassment of journalists in Pakistan, and a care workers' strike in New Zealand that is rooted in the gendered nature of care work everywhere. A small sample of the stories appearing on our health and safety page and Newswire this week included the deaths of paper mill workers in Canada, the huge and disproportionate toll that COVID-19 had on meatpacking plant workers in the United States, and new safety concerns for Indian cement factory workers. Our latest photo of the week is of workers in Ukraine who were participating in large demonstrations organized by trade unions in opposition to the latest round of so-called reforms to that country's labor laws. Labor Start hosts online solidarity actions at the requests of unions around the world. This week we'd like to highlight an urgent appeal for online solidarity with members of the Jordanian Teachers Union, who are at the receiving end of a concerted attempt to break them and their union. Education International, the global union federation for education workers, is doing all it can to mobilize support for its affiliate. In just a few seconds, you can do your part by sending a solidarity message. Look for details of this and other campaigns on our site. This is Derek Blackadder from Labor Start, reporting for Radio Labor.
Now here is Australia's Victorian Trade Union Choir with You Knew, Grandpa, You Knew.
Now global warming isn't new. The years you wasted were too plenty. You left the problem up to who? You knew our world would be in trouble as your emissions grew and grew. You said it's only froth and bubble, but did you really have a clue? You knew, Grandpa, you knew, Grandpa. So tell me, what did you do? Tell me what you do. You knew, Grandma, you knew, Grandma. So tell me, what did you do? Now hear a song from 2030. We hope it's getting through to you. Why did your power stay so dirty? How come you didn't just renew? You left the sea of doom above us, while you just flew and flew and flew. You chose a funny way to love us, to leave a greenhouse warming brew. You knew, Grandpa, you knew, Grandpa. So tell me, what did you do?
Tell me what you do.
You knew, Grandma, you knew,
Grandma.
So tell me, what did you do? Now hear a song from 2040. Sit up and listen to our view. That you were selfish and were naughty to leave a world in such a stew. You knew the temperature was rising. You hoped that it must stop at two. It's more, and so it's not surprising that we can put the blame on you. You knew, Grandpa, you knew,
Grandpa.
So tell me, what did you do?
Tell me what you do.
You knew, Grandma, you knew,
Grandma.
So tell me, what did you do?
And that's it. International labor news you can use. You can listen to our features and daily newscasts at radiolabor.net. I'm Mark Boulanger. Thank you for listening. And remember, it's all about global solidarity.